And welcome to another edition of Odyssey. I'm your host, Mike Schultz. We talk about ancient mysteries, metaphysical topics, and unfiltered, non-corporate news of the day. So we have a great show for you tonight. As I study and examine ancient mysteries on my path, I frequently run into Freemasonry and the works of Freemasons. It's tied very much up into this subject. So I invited a guest on tonight who is an expert. Welcome to the show, Kristen Pinto.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. I'm glad to be here.
Great. Now, what I want to ask you right off the bat is, you know, when I was educated in high school and college, I learned all about the Founding Fathers, and I never quite learned anything in the textbooks about Freemasonry, and yet most of these Founding Fathers were Masons, were they not?
Yeah, many of them were. Some of them, there's a question mark over their head. Guys like Thomas Jefferson, you'll find many Masonic lodges and teachers today. And really, for the past couple of hundred years, have claimed Jefferson as a Freemason. But many modern Masons, for example, will contend that because they can't find his initiation records, they question whether or not he was. But men like George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, and a host of others are confirmed Freemasons. But I think maybe the reason why we haven't read more about it would be twofold. A, the Captain William Morgan affair in 1826, which caused a huge uproar in the country, and B, many of the Masons were very secretive about their membership. Benjamin Franklin is the classic example. In his autobiography, he writes all about his involvement in the founding of America and so on. He doesn't say one word about Freemasonry.
Now, this Morgan affair was a murder that occurred, didn't it, among Freemasons?
Right. Back in 1826, there was a guy named Captain William Morgan who was a Freemason. He got out of Masonry and then felt compelled to warn or to report to the American people what was happening in the secret rituals of the Masonic lodges. And so he published a book that you can still find copies of to this day on the secret, the first three degrees of Masonry, and what the Masons swear, their blood oaths, and things like that. All of that became public knowledge through Captain William Morgan. And what happened was a group of Masons kidnapped Morgan, and this was all known while it was happening by the people of the town. They kidnapped him and his publisher initially. They end up letting his publisher go. They kept Morgan and killed him. He was tied up and then drowned eventually. And there were several of the Masons that, or at least one of them that we know of, that made a deathbed confession of it years later and gave the details of what happened. And that's recorded in a book called The Character Claims and Practical Workings of Freemasonry by a guy named Charles Finney, who lived through that time and documented the evidence there. There's even in Batavia, New York, where all this happened, a statue of William Morgan. And it has carved on the statue a brief telling of his story, how he was kidnapped by Masons and so on. And then on the reverse of the statue, they have carved where you can find the documentation of the William Morgan affair. This was a huge event in America's history. It even led to the birth of America's first third party in American politics, the Anti-Mason Party.
And a lot of people don't know that, but it was actually called the Anti-Masonic Party.
It was called the Anti-Mason Party. And,
right.
You had people like John Quincy Adams who were members of this party. So a lot of prominent Americans were in an uproar over what happened. And, in fact, many of the Masons at that time, like 70 to 80%, some might even say more, left the lodges. And many people believe that Freemasonry was going to dry up at that point.
Right.
But it came back.
It came back. Now, set the stage for us back in the 1776. All of these wise men are coming together and creating this wonderful independent document from England. How does Masonry play into this? What is their agenda?
Well, the Masons, you find Freemasonry at, and people involved not just with Masonry now, but people involved with Rosicrucianism, people involved with other secret groups. Franklin was, Benjamin Franklin, was involved with a group over in England called the Hellfire Club, and they were initially called the Monks of Medmenham Abbey. And their founder, a guy named Sir Francis Dashwood, was the he founded this group that was known for performing all of these anti-Christian rituals and these drunken orgies and things like this. And they were among the first to adopt a phrase that had been set down by a French, like a radical, rebellious French priest, a guy named François Rabelais. And the phrase was, "Do what you will shall be the whole of the law." Okay, and this was later adopted in the 20th century by Aleister Crowley. And he set that down in his Book of the Law and so on. But Rabelais was the first to write it. It was picked up by Dashwood and the Hellfire Club. Benjamin Franklin is involved with these guys. Now, the reason this is significant is because Francis Dashwood was a close advisor to King George III. That's the king that the American colonists rebelled against in the American Revolution. Okay,
sure.
And a number of the high-ranking members in England's government at that time were also members of this Hellfire Club. All right? So, yeah, very interesting. So Franklin is a member of the Hellfire Club in England. Then over in France, he's the head of the Nine Sisters Lodge in Paris, where you have guys like the Marquis de Lafayette, you have John Paul Jones, and others who would be involved in the American Revolution and then in the French Revolution later on. And then Franklin, of course, was the master of a lodge, I believe, in Pennsylvania as well. So here you've got Franklin very involved in Masonic lodges and with secret societies. And then, of course, George Washington was a Freemason. Many people are familiar with that. There's the George Washington Masonic Memorial in Washington, D.C., that's entirely dedicated to the idea of Washington as a Freemason. And that whole thing was modeled, if you go on, you could go online and see pictures of it, but it was modeled after the Lighthouse of Alexandria, one of the Seven Wonders of the World. And it's got all of Washington's Masonic regalia there and so on.
My understanding is he wrote a series of letters about Masonry, somewhat warning the American public about it. Is that true or no?
Not from what I understand. His letters about Masonry, the series of letters warning Masonry, warning Americans about Masonry, comes from John Quincy Adams. And this has to do with his affiliation with the anti-Mason party. The real warnings about Masonry didn't begin until this Captain Morgan affair. And what happened with Captain Morgan, it wasn't just that the Masons kidnapped a guy and killed him. It was because when the people of Batavia went to bring these guys to justice, as Charles Finney records in his book, he says they found that they could do nothing with the sheriffs, with the courts, with the judges, and so on, because in every place of power, there was somebody who was affiliated with Freemasonry, okay? And this is really where the modern conspiracy theories about Masons, you know, being the hidden government in America. But that's even based on senatorial and congressional investigations that happened later on, reported that Masonry was a distinct independent government within our own government.
Would you say they have more of a political agenda or a spiritual agenda?
Well, I would argue that they have a combination of both, one really fuels the other. The documentary that you initially called me about, the one we just released, which is Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Washington, D.C., is very appropriate that Masonic and Rosicrucian and really all this esoteric philosophy that is at the heart of these organizations is expressed throughout Washington, D.C., and that is the seat of power in America. So it's the combining of their esoteric beliefs with America's government.
Right. So let's say you're one of the founding fathers back in the 1700s, and you get involved in Masonry, and you work your way up the ladder to the 33rd degree. What do you find? What are the secrets? What is the meaning of the rituals at that point?
Well, first of all, the 33rd degree did not exist at that point in history. That was developed later through Scottish Rite Masonry through the 19th century. And then you get into Albert Pike, and Pike designed the 33rd degrees of the Scottish Rite. Typical Masonry at that time involved the 3 degrees, the first, second, third degree. And at the third degree, you become what is called a Master Mason. Okay, and all Masons go through the first 3 degrees, and then you can branch off from there into the York Rite or the Scottish Rite. But once you're a Master Mason, you're considered a full Freemason, and you meet on the level and so on with all other Masons, no matter whatever they're doing in the other degrees. At least that's what they tell everyone.
Okay.
As far as finding out great secrets at that point, I think that would really depend on what sort of Mason you were. And the secrets that they were, you know, it's really tough to say, because for the longest time, it was only in 1717, if you look at the history, prior to 1717, that was when the official Grand Lodge of England was established. And this was the first time that Freemasonry became an official registered entity, if that makes sense. Prior to that, anybody who was a member of these secret groups, they didn't have records. They didn't have, you know, they weren't registered down at the local courthouse. That didn't happen.
No, it was off the books. Right.
Yeah, it was all off the books, and only those who were a part of these groups knew who the others were. But it was something that secrecy, yeah, secrecy was considered sacred. You don't talk about it. And there are Masons to this day who practice that kind of secrecy. Franklin was one of those kind of Masons. That's why he never wrote about Masonry.
Let me try this theory on you. I've talked with you previously, and you mentioned that the idea was to set up America as this, you know, ideal country, and then branch out all over the world with influence, which is exactly what the United States has done. What do you say to that?
Well, yeah, that's the series that we're working on that deals with the founding of America. In part one, we've done two parts so far. Part one is called Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, Volume 1, The New Atlantis. And this really talks about we start really in England with a guy named Sir Francis Bacon. Francis Bacon lived during the era of Queen Elizabeth I, was a member of her court, and Bacon wrote the book, The New Atlantis. But the subtitle is, it's called The New Atlantis, The Land of the Rosicrucii, or the Rosicrucians. Bacon was the chief of the Rosicrucians in England. Rosicrucianism is really the combining of Christianity and the ancient mystery religions, and really sort of blending them together. That's the symbolism of the rose and cross, which is their symbol. Well, Bacon is also believed to have been the founder of what is called or considered modern Freemasonry. And he's considered the first Grand Master of modern Masonry. And really, he developed it from the Rosicrucian Foundation there in England. And then it became official after his death, 100 years after his death, in 1717. And, of course, I'm giving you the short version of that story, but basically, we start with Bacon, and Bacon saw America, as many of his contemporaries did, as the site of ancient Atlantis, literally the site of the ancient Atlantean Empire, as recorded by Plato and, you know, believed was this grand utopian empire from the ancient world. But it was believed that Atlantis extended to all the earth at one point before it was destroyed. And so the belief of America was that ancient societies, all the way back to Egypt and Babylon and so on, knew of this continent, but they kept it a secret because they one day believed that it would be rediscovered and be used as a launching pad to create this esoteric, philosophic empire that would, like Atlantis, spread to all the world. And that's what many of us believe is really the kind of the origins of this New World Order globalist agenda that we're seeing played out by secret societies today.
Right, and the interesting part of it is that it's all being done behind the scenes. I have no problem with the world government. If they want that, come out and ask us. And if we vote on it, then that's fine. But that's not what's happening. It's all going on behind closed doors, correct?
Well, you know, much of it is happening behind closed doors. From, you know, I've had the opportunity to go and interview a number of these, you know, high-ranking Masonic leaders, apologists, teachers, people who are members of groups like Co-Masonry, people who have involvements in Rosicrucianism and these secret societies, and others who work closely with them. And from what they're telling me collectively, what's happening is you have a lot of books and a lot of materials that are being disseminated even now, knowingly, sort of secretly or openly, carefully unfolding the history of the past couple of hundred years and sort of letting people on to the idea of what's happening and why it's happening. A great example of this is, well, there's Carol Quigley's Tragedy and Hope. There's Dr. James Billington's Fire in the Minds of Men. That's another, you know, important book to consider because President George Bush quotes from, in his 2005 inaugural address, he quotes from the book Fire in the Minds of Men.
And Bill Clinton was greatly influenced by Quigley.
Right. Clinton is influenced by Quigley, and here you've got Bush quoting from Fire in the Minds of Men, which chronicles the revolutionary movement from the Bavarian Illuminati with Adam Weishaupt all the way up through the French Revolution, Russian Revolution, the Nazi and Soviet revolutions. Okay, and really calls them all part of the same movement. And here you've got Bush talking about what he's doing with his administration, and he says, quote, "We have lit a fire as well, a fire in the minds of men." Okay, now Mrs. Bush knows Dr. Billington, who wrote this book. She's like a member, he's the Librarian of Congress. He's the official Librarian of Congress. All right?
Right.
He's a brilliant researcher, and he writes this book, and here Bush is quoting it, and he says, "We've lit this fire in the minds of men. It warms those who feel its power. It burns those who fight its progress. And one day," he says, "this untamed fire of freedom will reach the darkest corners of our world." Unquote. And we show
this
clip.
Now, we know that. Sure.
I was going to say, we show this clip in Riddles and Stone. And so we give you the background and the references in the book, and then we show the clip from President Bush's 2005 inaugural address. So if you want to see it for yourself and hear him say it, get our film, get Riddles and Stone. But, yeah, it's an obvious reference. And the thing is that James Billington in the book, he says that it's the Bavarian Illuminati who lit the fire in the minds of men. They're the ones who launched this this revolutionary movement, and all the other revolutionary movements were inspired by them.
Bush Senior and Junior are members of Skull and Bones, which is a secret society. How does that tie into Masonry? Does it overlap?
Well, General Russell, a guy named General Russell, we talk about him in the film, was the founder of the Skull and Bone Society back in the 1830s. He founded the Skull and Bone Society. He had been a member of a secret society in Germany. Now, Germany, i.e. Bavaria, is the home, the original home of the Bavarian Illuminati. Okay? And we interview a guy in Riddles named Buff Perry, who's a professional cipher. He investigates a lot of these secret groups. Well, he believes that there's a connection between this German secret society that William Huntington Russell, that's his name, got involved with, okay, and the Skull and Bone Society. Why? Because Huntington Russell is a member of this group. He gets permission to come to America and found Skull and Bone Society. It was called the Skull, S-C-U-L-L. That was its name in Germany. And so that was the original name that he brought with him to America and founded the society at Yale. And the purpose of the society, according to Russell, was to restore these arcane groups in America, the Freemasons and the Rosicrucians, back into the fold of Europe and the original ideology that these European societies were about. Okay? And so the question is, okay, well, what ideology was...
What is it?
Exactly. What's that? And what is the ideology? It's this revolutionary, let's turn the world upside down. We have to destroy the old world order and build a new world order. All right? Because
right.
what had happened is after the American Revolution, America's, you know, thriving and doing well and going about its merry way. And there was this, American Masons and so on were very much into Americanism. And they weren't thinking in terms of global,
no.
you know, a global agenda. Hey, we got our freedom, that's all that matters. And I think, it's my theory now, that what Russell, the message Russell brought in with Skull and Bones was, hey guys, it's not just about America. America is the launching pad for a much bigger program. And we need to remember this bigger program. I think that's from what I've gathered thus far. I think that's what Russell, why he founded Skull and Bones.
And I believe
that
America is used to provide the muscle when a war is needed or a military base is needed around the world. The muscle is America, because look at how much money we spend in weapons. And by the way, tell us how we can get your film and DVD and give us some contact info, and then we're going to dive into secret architecture of Washington, D.C.
Okay, well, you can go to my home website, which is adullamfilms.com, adullamfilms.com, adullamfilms.com. And there we've got right on the front page, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Washington, D.C., and it's on DVD. And then if you scroll down, you'll find Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, Volume 1, The New Atlantis, which is the first part in this series. They're each 3 hours long. Secret Mysteries actually won Best Documentary Feature at the New York Film Festival, and it won Best Historical Documentary in Los Angeles. So it is an award-winning film, just to give it a little plug there, and inspire you to maybe watch both of them if you have any interest.
Absolutely. Now, I want to ask you about the layout of Washington, D.C., and the Washington Monument, which I believe is like an Egyptian obelisk. So tell us about how the city is laid out.
Well, the city was laid out by a French architect, a guy named Pierre-Charles L'Enfant. And L'Enfant is believed by most people to have been a Freemason. Some Masons today contend that issue. But he came over to America with the Marquis de Lafayette. Lafayette was definitely a Freemason. And so L'Enfant was commissioned by George Washington to do the city, the initial street plan. And so he does this layout. Now, most of the layout, as we explain in Riddles, is based around Federal Triangle. And Federal Triangle is a right triangle. It's based upon the Pythagorean theorem, A squared plus B squared equals C squared. And the idea that, you know, the square, two of the squared sides of a right triangle are equal to the squared total of the third side. Well, that's a very symbolic image in Freemasonry that is based largely in Pythagorean philosophy. And we talk a lot about Pythagoras in the film. But in a nutshell, it's the idea that the male principle, which represents A square, and the female principle, which is B square, equals the offspring of them both, the divine child. And if you study this divine child figure in Masonry and esotericism, it's a picture of the Masonic Christ figure. It's like Isis and Osiris and Horus. Horus is the Christ figure in this pagan trinity. And, of course, you find similar trinities set up throughout the ancient mystery religions, which most people who have studied them would quickly realize. But that's essentially what is the kind of the centerpiece for the city. And one of the things that we explain is the hypotenuse of this triangle, that represents the divine child. And one of the things that's talked about throughout The whole history and the explanation of America is the idea that America has this destiny. Manly P. Hall wrote the book, America's Secret The Secret Destiny of America. He has another book called America's Assignment with Destiny. And in the 1930s and so on, FDR, who had some knowledge of Manly P. Hall, and we talk about this in the film, how FDR actually sent messengers to Manly Hall's Philosophic Research Library in California and had them microfish all of his research materials. And we have an interview with, the president, the modern president of the society, who tells this story on camera. How FDR came and microfished all of Hall's materials. And then FDR starts using this word destiny to describe America. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And he talks about America's rendezvous with destiny. Well, then, with all that in mind, the National Archives building is built during the time of FDR. Well, there on Pennsylvania Avenue, the hypotenuse, the divine child, you have this figure that's built up in the tympanum of the National Archives building, and he's sitting on a throne, and there's six stars over his head, and there's all this symbolism, and we explain, you know, parts of it in the film. But what is the name of this man sitting on a throne? He's called Destiny.
Destiny.
He's called Destiny. They give him the name Destiny. So there's this clear idea, and it seems to go back to Bacon, back to this idea, this concept of America as the new Atlantis, and it's destined to, you know, turn into this world empire. One of the things that one of our ciphers talks about, Buff Perry, is that FDR's New Deal. FDR believed his New Deal and the new order of the ages, i.e. the phrase on the back of the dollar bill, were one and the same thing. And
sure.
That's why FDR wanted to put that symbol on the back of the dollar bill. FDR was, at the time, a 32nd degree Mason. His Secretary of Agriculture and later Vice President, a guy named Henry Wallace, was also a 32nd degree Mason. Wallace found the symbol, okay, somehow through his guru, a guy named Nicholas Rorick, who was a Rosicrucian and a member of the Theosophical Society. And Rorick was like a Russian mystic. There's even a Nicholas Rorick Museum in New York today. The guy was a kind of a New Age esoteric painter. And he spent years going around looking for evidence of the emergence of the New Age Christ, okay, the world teacher, the Maitreya, which he believed was going to appear at any time. And so this guy influences Wallace, who influences FDR, to put the Great Seal on the back of the dollar bill.
That's why it's there.
That's why it's there.
Because it's a strange, mysterious symbol, and it bothers a lot of people, and we're supposedly a Christian nation. But what do all these Christians who are Masons, when they stumble into this paganism as they move up the ladder of Masonry, how do they react to it?
Well, I think they react to it. You know, some of them, if they're going to read their Bible and they're going to believe it, they're going to have to get out of Masonry. But if they choose to, you know, in Masonry, in the Masonic lodges, when they have a Bible, what you will often see is you'll see a Bible sitting on a table, and then on top of the Bible is the square and the compass of Masonry. And what that means, if you study their writings collectively, what it means is that the understanding of the Bible is really governed by Masonic philosophy. In other words, you interpret the Bible from a Masonic point of view, which basically is that Jesus and Zoroaster and Krishna and so on are all one and the same. Okay, that's the Masonic viewpoint. Now, that's obviously not the viewpoint of the Bible or the gospel and so on. Jesus said, you know, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. So there's a conflict there, and this is why you find a conflict in, you know, in churches. Often they have a huge brawl at the Southern Baptist Convention on a regular basis over the issue of Masonry in the church. And you have a lot of Christians who say, hey, you know, these guys shouldn't be in the church unless they get out of Masonry, and that's an ongoing debate.
But don't you think there's so many perks involved with Masonry, like government positions and getting, you know, into the boards and big money and big jobs, that Masons look the other way?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Some
in fact, I have several friends who have become Masons. For example, a buddy of mine years ago had a brother who was in the state of Louisiana, was a district attorney, and he was thinking about becoming a judge. And he said some people approached him and they said, you know, if you become a Freemason, you'd have a really good chance of becoming a judge.
Right,
and
exactly. Connect.
Yeah, so he becomes a Mason, then he gets elected judge. So it's, yeah, there is the good old boy system, and they definitely entice people with power and opportunity and wealth and things like that. And, you know, that's the classic temptation.
Absolutely. Now, we're winding down just a few more minutes. Have the Masons ever knocked on your door and inquired into what you're doing, or have you been left alone?
You know, I'm a Christian, and when I first began my research into this, you know, it's why we list the P.O. box on our website. But when I first became a Christian, I was going to a church, and I ran into several Masons in the church there, and one of them turned out to be a 32nd degree Mason, and I was confronting him with Christian doctrine, and he was confronting me with his Masonic doctrine. And we did have a run-in, and he went and he talked to the – I mean, I was polite to him and so on, but I just, you know, stood my ground in terms of what I believe concerning the Bible. And he did go to the pastor of the church, and he said, hey, this guy's denigrating, you know, this honorable society and whatnot. And I tried to – anyway, he invited me down to the Masonic Lodge to see a ritual that they perform that's open to – friends of the Masons if they want to invite him. You don't take part in the ritual, you just go and watch. And he wanted me to come down there and see what was going on. He actually invited me to come join the lodge. I turned him down, but I did go and watch the ritual. And it was very bizarre. That was when I began to realize that the things I was studying about Masonry were completely true, but
right.
I also realized that these guys are they're human beings, you know. They're people, and they're not necessarily boogeymen in the closet. You know what I mean? Standing there, you know, with
no.
Most of them are just regular guys. That's
exactly. It's not till you get to the upper echelon that the agenda comes out, I believe.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
why don't you give
it? True.
We're running low on time here. Why don't you give out the contact information, how people can buy your film, and then we'll have to talk another time.
Sure. You can go to our website, which is www.adullamfilms.com, A-D-U-L-L-A-M-F-I-L-M-S, adullamfilms.com. And there we've got Riddles in Stone, and we've got Secret Mysteries Volume 1, The New Atlantis. Each of them are 3 hours long. They're on DVD. And by all means, check them out. We'd love you to see them.
Okay. Christian Pinto, thank you for being on the show.
All right, Mike, thank you so much. Have a great night.
You too. Take care. Okay, that was an excellent research on the subject of Freemasonry, and this is a new time slot for us on Monday nights, so I'll tell you a bit more about myself. My name is Mike Schultz, and I produce two DVDs on ancient mysteries, and you can see them at fountainsofyouth.net. The first one is called The Sands of Time, and it's all about the ancient astronaut theory, that an advanced group of beings helped create the first ancient cities all around the world and helped build the pyramids. So what we're going to do in a few minutes, my co-host is going to come on. Her name is Candia Sanders. She's an intuitive psychic. She likes the word intuitive to describe what she does. And we're going to open up the phone lines, and you can talk to her and ask any sort of personal question or general question, and she will give you her insights. So Candia will be coming on, and we'll have a little music. We'll have a little time out. And then we'll both come back on the same line. So that's how the second half of our show works. So anyway, my website, you can find it, of course, on the BBS main link. And check out my DVDs. And, you know, they're priced right for all budgets, $15 each. I've tried to keep the price low. And I give lectures all around the country with fascinating slides and We get into the Egyptian pyramids and Stonehenge and Easter Island and the temples of Cambodia and the Costa Rican spheres and the lines of Nazca. And if you've read the book Chariots of the Gods, it really updates that information because that book was written in 1968. So here it is almost 40 years later. And many, many more researchers beyond Eric von Däniken have jumped into the pool. And we're all, you know, getting closer and closer to the truth. And believe me, many clues have been left behind about our hidden history. And I believe the Masons have always known a lot of this information, this esoteric information. And it's coming out now. It really is. The veil is lifting in so many different ways. So anyway, I'd like to talk a little bit about the news of the day. You know, unfiltered news. I think the biggest story that's not being reported right now is the chemtrail issue. It appears that vapor trails or chemtrails have been sprayed in the sky since 1997. So we're going on 10 years now of chemtrails. And a normal vapor trail, of course, disappears in 30 seconds. But a chemtrail stays all day long for 8 hours, and it turns into a hazy artificial cloud. So go on the computer, type in chemtrails into a search engine, and you can see hundreds and hundreds of photographs of what they look like and how they're unnatural, and all sorts of websites with great information. Because it's not on the mainstream news whatsoever. You really have to go to websites. A really good site is rense.com, R-E-N-S-E.com. Jeff Rense, he's an investigative reporter, and he digs into chemtrails, and you can read about it there. So a lot of scientists have analyzed the residue from chemtrails, and they found that there's aluminum and barium and all sorts of metallic ingredients that, of course, we don't know what the effect is on the environment. This is being done without our consent. So let's all really look into them, and there's actually some devices called chemtrail busters, which are copper coils, and I don't know how well those work. I'm trying to ask everyone I know, and you know, we're really going to figure this out together, but apparently there's a type of copper coil that busts up the chemtrails, so we'll all look into that together. And like I said, it's time now for Candia to come on the show, and she's does private sessions, of course. You can call her privately, but you can get a free reading tonight on the air. So let me give out the numbers so you guys can start lining up for calls. And we're every Monday night live, by the way, for the hour, and she's on during the second half. So really great. She's at 877-876-5227. And we're up here in Portland, Oregon, and the Body, Mind, Spirit Expo is coming next week, and she's one of the main speakers at that event. So if you're up in the Northwest, please come and join us. I'm also a tarot card reader, and I do private readings on the phone. I really like to help people who are kind of lost or don't quite know what their path is in life, or, you know, the spirit guides and the angels, they really don't want to see us spinning our wheels. They want us to come to this planet and figure out what our talents and skills are and then use them to the best of our ability and not really waste time. So with my tarot readings, I try to focus in on that. I do phone readings nationwide and really help people hone in on what they should be doing, what their life's dharma and purpose is, so that they can be as effective as possible. And, of course, I work with people on relationships, too, and whether you can trust certain people or what their true inner nature is. We, you know, we lay out all the cards and look into those issues as well. So my latest DVD is called The Temples of Stone, and I get into the Orient in the East, and I travel over to Japan and have these amazing photos of this underwater monument called Yonaguni. And scientists believe it's over 9,000 years old, actually, because that was the time that all of the islands at the tip of Japan were connected and were above water. So it appears that there's an ancient temple or city below the last island off the coast of Japan. It was only discovered in 1985. And some really great researchers named Graham Hancock went over there. Okay, we're going to go off the air for a couple seconds, take a musical break, and we'll be on with Candia. Thank you. And we're back on the Odyssey Radio Show, live Monday nights. And welcome to the show, our intuitive, Candia Sanders.
Hi, good evening. So I hear you've had a great show tonight.
We did. We had a guest talking about Freemasonry and all of the influences in Washington, D.C., and then I was talking a bit about chemtrails. What's your take on the subject of chemtrails?
So you got into chemtrails. Well, you know, it's interesting along those lines. I've talked to different people along my path, and there was one gentleman that I talked to in California that was amazing. He knew so much information. Of course, it went right over my head because at that time I wasn't necessarily into it, but he was talking about how, and I may be repeating what you already talked about, but how you can watch the path of airlines and the airplanes up in the sky, the jets, and it how they move across the sky and how they vibrate when they start to dissipate is how you can see if it's affecting us in any way.
Right.
Did you guys talk about that?
We just talked about if they disappear in 30 seconds, it's pretty normal. But if they stay all day long, like 8 hours, then that's not normal.
This guy was amazing because he was a vet. And so then he had the background. And my problem, I have to be honest with you, that there were a lot of people around talking to me. I was trying to concentrate and listen to him. And I would have loved to have sat down and talked with him for hours because he had all this information from his own experience. But he was talking about, too, about, again, if they stayed, but how they dissipated and how they looked as if they vibrated differently as to how that then affects us and then, you know, infiltrates our world. You're going, okay, do I really want to know about this? You know, it's fascinating is what it is.
It really is. So it's an ongoing story, and we'll touch on it from time to time. So we're opening up the phone lines now. People can call in and talk to Candia. And you usually have an intuitive message each week. What's come up in the past week for you?
Well, interestingly enough, because of where you and I live, we live in the Northwest, and our weather patterns have been, but we're not alone, okay? They have been.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's like, is there spring? You know, I think they need to start calling us Noah here. I feel like we need the ark and starting with the bugs and the lizards. I mean, I'm thinking this is really part of our agenda because it just hasn't stopped raining. Well, what I have found to be true is that it's affecting our physical being, not only our mental, because once it hits our mental state and then our emotional state, it affects us physically. But there's literally, I've done some research on it too, because I'm finding it, of course, with my clients. And this is not anything brand new, of course. Everybody goes, you know, you've got SADS, you know, seasonal disorder. What is it? Seasonal affective disorder.
Affective disorder, right.
But it's more than that. It literally affects almost the nervous system, the whole chemistry of the body. Now, vitamin, and I may have talked about this before, but vitamin D can really help us and assist with this. But it also has to do with the nervous system, and the nervous system is where everything starts and begins and stops. You know, if we're not getting enough oxygen to our nervous system, it shuts us down. And what's happening, of course, we're not breathing enough because we're not outside. And again, we are in the West Coast where it's raining. But, I mean, my God, the East Coast has been inundated with snow. And then you've got the South where there's way too much in the way of heat. I mean, we're all over the board in terms of how we're being affected. And, of course, this can go into the worlds you're in where you can go into HARP and how it, you know, of course, the government says it doesn't affect us. But, hello, I totally disagree with that. I look at the frequencies of how, that's where it kind of goes back to your chemtrails, how all of these things affect us physically and who we are. Have you had people on before I came on to the show on HARP at all?
No, you know, it's so scientific that it actually goes a bit over my head. I don't quite understand it. But I know Dr. Nick Begich is the great speaker on that issue. I believe it's a military operation.
Right, and I know just enough to be dangerous on it, right? I don't know a lot. However, how I see it is how it affects our physical frequencies, because if it's disrupting the energy grids of the planet, it's going to affect our energy grids of our bodies, which goes into how it's affecting the geothermal pressures on the planet, again, going back to weather and how it affects our body, our nervous system. I mean, they're all interconnected. I also feel that we're being bombarded with different space energies that affect us. And the late, I was going to say, is it Dorothy Eady? I wasn't thinking about bringing her into the topic. That's not the right author right at the moment, but it was a woman of
your company. Think of it,
who lives here, he used to live here in Washington, who subsequently passed over, but she was talking about how what she called it is psi energy. And so you've got not only psi energy, it's this radiation that's coming from the solar system that is amping us up for this new millennium shift, which is, of course, what we're in right now. We're in the midst of it. It's not, you know, before us, it's 2012 or something. We're in the midst of it. So we're being amped up there. We're getting hit by HARP. We've got the chemtrails. You've got the weather patterns that are changing. And, of course, that's affecting all of our nervous systems. This is what's been coming up. Yes, what's my story? Kind of goes right along with what you are.
Well, so what can one person do? I mean, can one person change the weather? Or is it, it has to be group consciousness?
I think it has to be group consciousness. You know, it goes back. You know, actually, that's a brilliant question if you think about it. You've got the Native American shamans who would be the rain dancer, who would call in the sun and the clouds, you know, if they needed rain or if they needed sun. And I believe it was much easier at that time. Maybe I'm making this much more simplified than it actually is, but the population was less dense, so they had more connection with Earth. We are now so disconnected from the planet that I don't feel, unless we all get together as a group, that we have the same ability at this point, probably more than anything, because our belief system doesn't wrap around it. You know, you don't see a lot of people going around and chanting around fire anymore and drumming and sending their smoke signals to the next guy around the hill. So our belief system has shifted. It doesn't mean that we can't do that. I mean, you can take, and people have done this forever, where you take a meditation group and you're out on the hill and you start focusing on either creating a cloud or making one disappear. So I know we have the capacity to do that. However, what happens, as you well know, in the Northwest, again, as an example, is that if we go longer than 30 days without rain, oh, my God, the big D word comes up, drought. So our consciousness then goes into, oh, we need rain. Well, the problem is we've forgotten to set a limit on this. You know,
I see.
Winter would be nice. You know, springtime, yeah,
absolutely.
Could have some sunshine. But it does affect
that
our health.
So that's important that came up for you this week. Now, I'd like people to call in. It's really great when we get some live feedback from our audience because it really helps everybody. You know, our problems are common. And I have an ethical question for you, okay, as a reader. Can you ask a third-party question? Can you ask about someone else? What do you say to that?
That is a really good question. I have always, when somebody asks me about this, I'll just use it from my perspective. It depends. When it comes to healing, let's say when somebody asks me about a healing, in fact, we had somebody call in 2 weeks ago about their son. I don't have a problem. I kind of use the cutoff date as 18 because then they're adult. They have their own free will. And so if a parent is still in charge of that child, then I feel it's okay to talk about the child or to work on their bodies as an example. When someone, though, that is a little bit older, maybe even a teenager and comes to me, then, you know, I will separate them. Third person, I will get into it, you know, like somebody will say something about their love life, as an example.
Yeah, is someone attracted to me at the office, that kind of question.
Right,
you know.
Yeah, exactly. I will tap into that without going into any kind of their story, which is more in relationship, in direct context with the person who is asking the question. Because it's not, in my book, ethical to necessarily dive into their complete story unless they asked.
Right.
You know, it's an open book. That's why when I'm done with the session, boy, in essence, I turn off the light, turn off the switch, done, and so then it's back to normal energy with that person. And I tend to forget after a while what we've talked about because that's their story. It'd be if I had the switch on all the time, if I went into the grocery store, I'd be crazy, Looney Tunes with all those people. I hear all the story. And yet I know that there are individuals who do that. In fact, the first psychic I ever went to was a present from my mother when I graduated from college. Brilliant woman. She's my heroine. I always aspired to be as good as she is, a woman down on the peninsula. However, in Northern California. However, because it was very difficult for her to turn it off, she became an alcoholic. She tried to kill herself, and she was very, very successful. This was in the 70s. She was had a radio show, many, many radio shows, actually, and had a thriving office, practice, you know, 5 days a week, and literally set up 8 hours a day with clients. She was brilliant, but it got to be too much, and it's because she forgot to have the boundaries to shut it off. And I think that's where it's really critical, and that goes back to your third-party question, where I don't feel it's my place or my job to delve in where I'm not asked to go. because
I see.
You know, that's just my belief. So I've tried to always stay very ethical on that. You know, again, you can answer a question in regards or in relationship to that person's question without going into the, well, this person's been a bank robber, has been in jail, and you know, axe murderer, we don't need to talk about it, you know. So
I see.
That's a good
now,
question.
Thanks. People still have a chance to call in now. This is a really rare opportunity, and, you know, for you to offer your services on the radio for free is wonderful. So people should call in the number right now on the main website. Now, while we're waiting, why don't you tell me about perhaps a client that kind of stood out this week anonymously, maybe something you were working with?
Okay. A woman I was working with has kind of gone into what I would call an emotional slump, and it's been since right before Christmas, November Christmas. Now, before I go into her story, what's fascinating, since November, I have seen more of this. I do think some of it's, of course, back to the weather because it's northwest, but I've also seen activated viruses in bodies, and it's pretty generalized. It's not locations. It's kind of location, location, location. I mean, it doesn't matter if they're on the East Coast or Southern California or here in the Northwest. So the frequencies have been up. So interestingly enough, that also affects our moods. Well, we were having a discussion. We went back into her childhood to find out where things were generated and where they were created so we could help neutralize it in her reactionary points of view. And what was really fascinating for me is that what showed up was this fear of approval or a lack of approval of being looked over from her childhood. So it then, in turn, became the self-critic within her psyche. Well, what was fascinating and how it relates to all of this is it showed up, of course, in the solar plexus. And if you look at the solar plexus as a chakra point, the bottom part of that is right by your belly button. So there was literally the umbilical cord was still hooked into her. I thought, oh my God, this is brilliant, that where she was still carrying on her mother's sense of trauma and the things that she had gone through that she then created and pulled into her birth body. Now,
wow.
I remember back in the 70s, you know, we had the EST and then the rebirthing classes, and to be honest with you, at the time I thought, yeah, get over it already. However, in hindsight, they actually have a lot to say about that because now not every birth is like that. Not everybody has what I would say a more traumatic birth. Not every child is born with forceps. A lot of people are be able to have children naturally and quite easily. So I can't say that's, you know, unequivocally, universally solid that that's going to be the case. However, in this case, I thought, you know, this is really a good example of how it could be for all of us where we go back into that point where we actually have taken on not only the belief patterns of our parents by observing them, but literally genetically. Of course, I believe in the cellular memory that comes down through generations, but this is like one more level of it where she actually took on her mother's traumas when she was being born. It's like, wow, this is fascinating. And then, of course, then it has affected how she has looked at her life. And then, of course, by growing up and watching her parents' relationship with one another, their relationships with her individually and as a whole, her dynamic in the family. But it's all how we can look at our own lives. It's a great example for all of us to turn the mirror inward in on ourselves so that we can go back into our past. Because that's truly, we can wash over it and act like nothing happened, everything's copacetic. But if you find yourself repeating patterns over and over again, let's use relationship as an example, and you look back and you honestly look at yourself and you've had six of the same kinds of relationships, you attract to you the same kind of person, you don't think so at the beginning, but if in hindsight you're going, oh yeah, there we go again, I rescued again, okay, you're repeating a pattern, where does that come from? You really, from my view, it would behoove you to go back and look at your past to find out where it comes from and examine it, shift it, so you can be clear with who you are today. And so this was just a great window in. I had never thought about it actually at that level before, and I'm sure there are other people out there who have. It was just a new concept for me today because I look at the chakras, but not in necessarily connection before with the umbilical cord. again, for me, it was a new aha. Maybe there are, again, out there that other healers say, oh, yeah, I've been doing that for years. Okay, good for you. But I felt it to be very, very worthwhile. And it may show up when things like this come up on the radar. It can show up again because then it's like, oh, I've got something else to look for that it will help me then with working with other people. So I found it to be very positive.
Amazing. So you were able to dissipate these types of energies that you see in the body?
I felt so, and I've worked with this woman before. Actually, I've worked with her for about a year and almost a half now, off and on, you know, at different increments when she hits the next level of peeling off the onion. And then she'll try different modalities, and she'll call me back and say, okay, Candy, I need another tune-up. And we have had some great successes together, because I look at it as in tandem, where shifting I don't necessarily want to call them negative, but where we become self-critical and the negative impact we have on ourselves. You know, we're our worst critics more than anybody else. And with her, I have noticed where it shifts almost immediately, just almost immediately. With this, because it's a lifetime thing, my feeling with her, it'll be a 24-hour shift, and then it becomes subtle, and then a couple weeks later, you go, boy, I don't feel that anymore. But what's wonderful is that 90% of my clients really stay in touch with me and let me know where they are on things. I may not hear from them for 3 to 6 months, then I'll get a quick email. So, and say, well, I'm doing great with this. This is what's going on. So I know that these are shifts that become part of a permanent change in their lives. And then it's, for me, it's really gratifying. You know,
that is incredibly gratifying. Well,
I have an attachment to outcome.
I'm going to let you close the show, and why don't you talk about the Body Mind Spirit Expo, and you are going to be one of the headline speakers, and then you can go ahead and sign off.
Great. Well, Mike, thank you once again for
thank
joining
you.
Me. And it sounds like you had a fabulous earlier program today.
Yes.
Which is wonderful. And then, wait, before you go, do you have anything
sure.
planned? Well, you're going to be gone next week. We're both going to be gone on the 16th. And then what about the following week? Do you have anything planned yet for the show?
That's going to be your show. So
that's right. I keep thinking it was our show together.
Invite on a guest. This will be your turn to have a guest.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's right.
I will chime in as the co-host on that show.
Okay.
But we always have something exciting every Monday, definitely.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I will have to say that it was the gray weather that put a brain fog in my head because it's be true.
If people only knew what we were going through in Portland right now. But tell us about the Big Body, Mind, and Spirit, a bit what you're going to talk about, and we'll let you sign off.
Okay, great. Thank you. This fall, this coming weekend here in the Northwest in Portland, Oregon, there will be the Body, Mind, and Spirit Expo. For those who are not familiar with these particular shows and expos, Body, Mind, and Spirit, you can go on the web and look them up under bodymindandspirit.net, BMSE.net. And they have shows all across the United States. They've been in business, they are one of the longest running spiritual expos now in the nation. They are coming here as a group to Portland at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. There are, I think, to be scheduled over 120 exhibitors of all different kinds of color, shapes, you know, ideas, which is really awesome. You're going to have massage therapists. There will be green foods, there will be vitamins. There will be other readers. There will be animal pet psychic communicators. There will be crystals and books. You name it. And all the new gadgets and machinery out there, which, of course, I have to admit, I am not up to date on because I don't have enough time. I've got my own stuff going on. But there are so many great things out there. I have said this before. I will say it again. When you go to these shows, go through and really feel how it fits for you because not every person, not every modality is right for you. They may say it is. I'm of a disagreement on that. I feel that there are certain vitamins that are going to be perfect for you and other supplements that are not. There will be certain modalities and machines that are going to be great for you and others that are not. But go out and explore and have a great time. For those in the Northwest, I would love to have you come down and join us because it will be a very fun event. Again, over 120 vendors, so you can have many, many things to choose from. There are free lectures during the course of both Saturday and Sunday, so you can choose from anything out there in the world of self-help to choose from to learn about, which is really great, especially if you are curious about something new. It's a great opportunity to come in and, for a very low entry fee, have access to many, many lectures. I will have, personally, I will have a booth set up on both days, booth 10 at, again, the Oregon Convention Center, and I will have a free lecture on Saturday at 3 p.m. for those who are interested and are in the Portland, Vancouver metropolis, as well as over to the beach and east, as far as you can, you know, if you want to come to Portland. It will be a great weekend, so we would love to have you. And then again, in 2 weeks, the last weekend of the month of the Body, Mind, and Spirit Show will be in Seattle at the Seattle Convention Center. But when that time comes, we'll talk about then. Again, thank you for joining Mike and I here on the Odyssey programming. We thank Don with BBS Radio because he does a fabulous job. The programming that you have to choose from is wonderful. You have many, many different programs to listen to and be tuned in with, and also have access to call in. And why not take advantage of this opportunity when people have the number up for you to call? Take the time to call in and interact with the different speakers and programmers. It's not only fun, but it's also very informative. So again, we thank Don for creating this format for Mike and I and all the others for us to be able to put together our programs. Stay tuned again for other Odyssey programming. Tune in with Mike and I next week here at 8 o'clock, 8 to 9 p.m. And every Monday from then on out, Odyssey program with Mike Schultz, and my name is Candia Sanders. Please go to my website, CandiaSanders.com, for any other information. And have a fabulous and wonderful week. And I will end. Let's pray to the sun gods for some solar rays, because we here in the Northwest could sure use it. On that note, have a great week and good night.